What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Gentleman's Roundtable Body Recomposition. I'm your host, Jeff Packman. With me, I have Coach Taters, Andy Tate, and Austin Chan Fitness. And we are here to pump out another weekly episode. What's going on, Austin? How are you doing today?
Good, good. I've been up since 5 a.m. Had a couple client sessions this morning. Feeling good. Got my pot of coffee going. Yeah, that's pretty much it. Now we're on this podcast. Been prepping for it this morning.
And this is our second take at the podcast, so we're literally just redoing it.
I'm gonna act like that was my first time saying it.
This is definitely not scripted. Taters, how you doing this morning?
Doing good, mate. I did my first run yesterday.
Ooh.
Since the 1st of June of last year. I can't believe it's been that long. I actually do remember the run I did last time. And it's actually the first run I've done since I've been living at this apartment, and which is crazy. So anyway, I was sucking wind, mate. I was like, right, I'm just going to go and test my 5K, right? And then I've got something to work on because I want to also get in some zone two and see if I can improve my 5K by just kind of mostly doing some zone two work.
Ooh, I like it.
So I thought, let me just test the 5K. I didn't go flat out. Otherwise, I would have died, definitely. But anyway, my legs are super sore today and I had to train legs this morning. So I got up and my alarm went off and I laid in bed for half an hour staring at my phone with one eye open, thinking I should get up. I didn't want to get up, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I was just there looking at my phone, scrolling on stupid bullshit social media, like for no good reason, thinking I just want to stay in bed, but I should get up. Up I got into the fucking cave, got my workout done. Olivia woke up halfway through. She came down and was messing around down in the gym. She was like, I want you to come upstairs, watch TV with me. By the way, that's my daughter. Not my partner. So I was like, oh, right, go on then. But I did get my workout finished. But yeah, all good. Then I had took her to daycare. Had a consultation call this morning that went really, really well. Really awesome to connect with the person this morning. And here I am now. I got my smoothie for the old Belgian dip and ready to rock and roll. How you doing, Jeff?
I'm good, man. It's been a busy, busy week so far. Lots of consult calls, lots of client applications coming in. I got a launch week, so bringing on about 10 clients this week and next week. So got a lot of work planned out, a lot of stuff to do. And last week I onboarded 2 clients, so I've been getting them all settled in. So it's been really good. And yeah, man, my own personal fitness. I missed a workout last week for the first time in a long time. And I actually made the decision to skip a workout. I've been playing so much fucking pickleball that my lower body was just like sore as fuck. Like, and by sore, I mean like my hips were tight. My knees were like a little bit angry at me and I just needed to recover a little bit. So took some extra time to rest and recover, went on some walks and got some extra sleep in. I've been working on my sleep, and Andy, I actually got an eye mask after our conversation on the podcast. I think it was last week. I don't remember. We talked about sleep and you talked about how you use an eye mask. So I actually got one on Amazon and I've noticed a big difference in my sleep from the eye mask.
That's awesome.
Yeah, dude, it's been great. So, and like, I feel like my watch, I don't know how well these things actually track sleep, probably not very well, but I do notice that like, it says that my sleep quality is improving pretty drastically. Mm-hmm. So I didn't really change anything. I'm actually trying to shoot for 9 to 10 hours of sleep, which it sounds like a lot, but there's like research coming out that shows that that if you're an athlete, like nine to 10 hours is actually the sweet spot. So
I think 24 is supposed to be the best.
24 yeah. is definitely the best.
Yeah. Just hibernate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just not realistic for most people, I feel like, to sleep that much, but trying the best I can to get as much sleep as I can. So that's yeah. That's
do you target. Do you naturally get those 9 to 10 hours, like if you were just like purely listening to your body?
No, not really. I can so but I'm the kind of person, once I like lay down in bed and I like start my nighttime routine, I'm like, I'm out like a light. For me though, like I got the puppy and stuff and he wakes me up at like 5 a.m. So I usually let him out around 5. So I would have to go to bed very early and have like no social life in order to get that much sleep. So I'm just trying to get that much sleep like a couple nights a week and then get my normal 8 hours. But yeah, it's been good. I got a new bed coming. I ordered a new bed from a company called Lull, L-U-L-L, and I'm going to give a review on the podcast. No paid promotions. But I ordered a nice bed. The bed I have right now is a piece of shit. So I feel like that's been impacting my sleep for sure. But I made a big boy decision and purchased a nice bed. So I'm proud of myself.
Nice. Is it one of those companies where like you can take a quiz? And they have like custom mattresses in a sense?
No, it's just a like medium firm mattress. And I liked it because they do like a year long money back guarantee. So if you don't like, if you don't like it after a year, you can send it back. So,
okay.
Which I feel like a year is plenty of time to figure out whether you like a mattress or not.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And there's like a 10-year warranty on different stain. It's like a stain warranty for 10 years, which I think is crazy.
So it's a stain-proof mattress? Is that what they're marketing?
No. Like if you get a stain on your mattress or you don't like it or there's like bumps in it or whatever, you can send it back. They'll send you a new one for 10 years. For 10 what? Years. Yeah.
So if you're an idiot and you spill shit on your own mattress, you'll be like, I did it again. Yeah, spilled my coffee.
they probably only let you do it once.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm like, oh shit, there you go. I spilled my bottle of wine again for the 10th time.
I'll wait until I have like 40 stains on it before I send it back in.
Hopefully they won't ask what the stains are.
Yeah, we won't.
Yeah, when you fill out the form.
Well, that's kind of private.
Anyways.
So yeah, all right. So this week, I thought it would be interesting if we all kind of went around and talked about our nutrition. I know nutrition is kind of it's the hardest part of this whole thing for people. Like it's the part that will impact your body composition the most, arguably, and it's also the hardest part for people to figure out, especially if you have a family, especially if you have kids, especially if you have an active social life, which I don't think me or Austin really have that problem. But I do think that it would be nice for us to kind of go around and explain how we shop for our food and how we prep our food, if we prep our food or if we just prepare meals that are simple and easy, that are quick to prepare, and just kind of the stuff that we eat mostly on a weekly basis. So yeah, I just kind of wanted to go around and talk a little bit about that. So Austin, let's start with you. How do you prepare your nutrition for the week? Like, what is your mindset going into it?
So yeah, we'll kind of go from like, not necessarily, but like just to joke around, like the farm to table approach. So basically just like shopping, like, and yeah, one of the things like people like to complain about, like, oh, like eating healthy is so expensive. And like, I don't really, like, honestly, I don't really find it like too expensive. Like if anything, it's always less expensive than actually going out and ordering takeout. Because if you think about restaurants and all that, their bottom line is making profit. So it's always going to cost more than the grocery prices themselves. So like, I don't understand where the argument's coming from. But also, like, on the other hand, like, I am an avid coupon clipper. I always shop around, like, look for the best deals, especially protein, as we know, is like the most expensive macronutrient, just getting meats and all that. So I always try to look for like the lowest price in town. I always, when things go on sale, I will stock up on them. Like, my freezer is literally full of like chicken breast, 93.7 ground beef, that kind of stuff. But yeah, in terms of staples, I always load up on veggies. A lot of lean proteins, like I said, 93.7 ground beef, steak sometimes, chicken breasts, chicken thighs. For pork cuts, typically pork loin. Through my own research, I've found that that's typically like the leanest cut for porks. Eggs are another really good cheap protein source. I eat a lot of egg whites as well. Fruits, I know that sometimes fresh fruits and veggies can be expensive. But I try to shop for like the cheapest ones. Like, potatoes are always a good staple. Let's see, oats. I know that's not a vegetable, but yeah, oats are another good source. Fruits, definitely. Yeah, fruits and veggies, definitely frozen. Frozen or canned, those are always super cheap compared to like the fresh options. And they're arguably more nutritious than the fresh versions themselves. Mm-hmm. And I don't really have any like peer-reviewed research or whatever to back this up. But what I've read is that basically like canned and frozen stuff, because of the way that they are prepared and shipped and all that, like if we think about fresh, they have to harvest it a little bit early so that by the time they ship it to the grocery stores or the supermarkets, we had a Andy talking about supermarkets and grocery stores earlier this morning, but by the time they ship it over, they have to harvest it a little bit early, so by the time it gets to the grocery store, it is like a little bit like less, like it's not fully ripe because they have to harvest it a bit early, whereas like frozen or canned, they can harvest it right when the vegetables and fruits are ripe, so that they can flash freeze it or flash process it and can it right away, and then it's preserved. Basically, all the nutrition and everything is preserved by the time it gets to the grocery store, and it also has like preservatives that keep it in good condition by the time you prepare it and eat it. That was a kind of long tangent. I'm trying to get back.
Yeah, I wanna go off something you said really quick, because you mentioned how a lot of people think that eating healthy is expensive, and I think those same people are, because this is what I did when I was getting into health and fitness, and I was like, I need to eat healthy. I need to look for things that say organic, pasture-raised eggs. I need to grass-fed beef. Like, I need to shop at Whole Foods because Whole Foods is healthy. And so this was my mindset going into eating healthy, but the truth of the matter is that you will still get a ton of health benefits from eating whole foods, whether it is organic, non-organic, conventional. Like, it doesn't matter, because the majority of people aren't even eating fruits and vegetables. So just by you switching over from eating more fruits and vegetables, more lean proteins, and more nutrient-dense foods, the label on those foods, whether it says organic or not, is not as important as just getting them in. Would you agree with that?
Oh yeah, 100%. Like, honestly, it's something called the health halo, and it's like a huge marketing thing that people slap on all these random labels. And like, meanwhile, like if you really look at it, there's really like no difference. Like, if anything, it's like minimal. And basically, it gives these companies a way to charge 3-4 times the price of like normal groceries. And yeah, basically the marketing term for them to make more money while pretty much putting out the same product. So yeah.
I would agree with
that. And then like also like your point about like most people aren't even eating all of these lean proteins, fruits and veggies anyway. So like just switching over to that, that's a huge win. That's a huge step in the right direction. Yeah.
Yeah. Can you go a little bit into like how you think about preparing food for the week? Like, do you prep everything on Sunday, or do you just kind of like pull stuff out, thaw it, and cook it as needed? Like, what are your thoughts coming into the week of how you like set yourself up for success, especially with something like fat loss where your nutrition needs to be a lot more dialed?
Yeah. So staples, I pretty much either bake or air fry all my stuff just because the preparation process is so simple for those things. Like although from time to time, I do like to like sit down and, or not mean sit, not sit down, but like actually take the time to prepare and cook stuff. But for the most part, I just like want everything as streamlined as possible. I can like throw it into the air fryer, throw it into the oven, just like forget about it, set a timer, and then everything's prepped and it tastes pretty decent. Also, like rice is also another good one. Something that like keeps kind of well in the fridge, and then I can just like reheat it super fast. But yeah, and in terms of proteins, I've tried like the meal prepping everything on Sunday or one day out of the week, and I just personally I can't do that just because like when something sits in the fridge for like 7 days and then it just doesn't taste as good. So I like knowing like full well like what I need to do, take a little bit more time throughout the week to prepare. I will prepare things, you know, 3 to 4 days in advance rather than having the full seven. Although I do understand I don't have that many like time commitments right now, I can afford to do that. But for someone who's like, I only have time on Sundays to prepare everything, then maybe that's an option for you. It's about like really weighing out like what can you afford to do and all that. And sometimes for some people it might not make sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. And I think for a lot of people, they hear the word meal prep and they're like, I need to prep exactly the meals that I'm going to be eating throughout the week, rather than having, like you said, like prep out that rice, the proteins that you want, you know, have some vegetables ready to go to whack in the air fryer to make sure that like you can put together some tasty, simple, quick meals, you know, with just like a microwave or an air fryer, and just like have a meal ready to go in like 2 or 3 minutes. I think that's kind of the goal of the way that you prep throughout the week. Does that sound right?
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. And then also that kind of brought up a point that I do want to talk about. Like some people, when they think about meal prep, and especially with like this day and age of people having all of these high protein, low calorie recipes all over the place, and it sounds like it's like super good food and it's supposed to like taste exactly like restaurant or fast food quality. There's just this whole age that like because of that, I feel like people kind of go into the mindset of like, oh, everything that I'm preparing has to be like a gourmet ass meal and taste super good. But most of the time, like the foods that I have are good enough, like to where like I can eat them. They don't taste too bad, but like I wouldn't call them like a 5-star restaurant experience. And that's right. Something I think people need to realize, that your meals don't have to be super elaborate or like super tasty and 5-star like Michelin restaurant meals. They can just be good enough to the point where like you enjoy eating these meals. It's something that you can actually stick to. You don't have to be eating like poached chicken, broccoli, and rice every single day, 6 times a day, but you can actually season your food and make it taste decent.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to get into that point about talking about seasonings and sauces and all of that. I'll get into that with mine because I feel like that might help a lot of people out that are struggling with making their food taste good, even if it's just like really simple shit. But yeah, man, that's awesome. Andy, what about you, man? How do you prepare? Because I feel like you also have a family that you need to look out for as well. So your experience may be different than me and Austin's.
Yeah, to a certain degree, it probably is. But it's also, when it comes to myself, I do eat quite a lot of meals on my own. Like I generally have lunch on my own, or I'll have lunch with Lucy. And that's not quite as challenging as having like a family dinner or like a weekend meal where we all eat together. So when I have meals on my own, I'll do a similar thing to you guys where I would like, we always have rice cooked. We have a rice cooker, and there's like, we actually have two rice cookers. And so when one is in the wash, we can use the other one. And so there's always enough rice to just stick in the microwave, stick it on the plate. And like you, Austin, I will find out when chicken breast is on sale, or I'll see what meat is on sale and try and stock up on that cut of meat. Generally like pork tenderloin, can be really good, or chicken breast. If that's on sale, I stock load that and sticks it in the freezer. Lucy gets mad about that because there's no more freezer space. But and then I just keep it in a container with, keep it marinated for a day or so, and either cook it all at once or cook it on demand over the next couple of days.
What do you use to marinate your chicken?
Generally, I'll just use a taco seasoning. Let me just get a disclaimer here, because we're talking to a chef. So anyone that's listening, Jeff is a chef, okay? And I'm not. And I don't do meal plans, one, because it's not in my scope, and two, because I eat fucking boring food, okay? And I air fry everything. We'll get onto that in a minute. And it tastes fucking awesome. Okay.
Yeah.
So
that's awesome, dude.
Yeah. So I buy taco seasoning and I cover the chicken in the taco seasoning, leave it in the fridge maybe overnight, sticks it in the air fryer, bada bing, bada boom, Bob's your uncle. How's your father? Tastes bloody great.
Yeah, that's the goal. Like we said, like, you don't have to be cooking up these fancy ass gourmet meals.
Yeah.
Yeah. And honestly, like, actually on that point, if you're cooking fancy ass gourmet meals all the time, right? If your food tastes phenomenal and you're like putting in a lot of effort to your meals and it looks great and it tastes great and it's just like, oh, this is the best thing I've ever tasted in my whole life, good luck trying to stop eating when you're on a diet when that food tastes that fucking good. And it's like, if you're honestly like, I couldn't stop, honestly. If I made food that's good and I've put that much effort into making that food look so great, I find it so difficult to be like, I'm not going to have another portion, because it's there and I've got so much more that I could eat that I'm supposed to portion out for the next few days, but it tastes so good and I'm hungry because I've been in a deficit for 12 weeks and I'm going to eat more. But if I make two sandwiches in the air fryer, which I do, right?
You make sandwiches in the air fryer?
Trust me.
Break it down. How do you make a sandwich in the air fryer?
Trust me. Just trust me, okay? Sourdough bread is the numero uno. This is the thing, right, as well. You can get bread, like regular sourdough bread or regular white or brown bread, whatever it is, that's not even that high calorie, you know? I have two sandwiches every day for lunch, either ham or I'm trying to cut down on the ham a little bit because it's processed. I like to buy like a good quality ham if I can, but sometimes I get the processed stuff, which I shouldn't really, but oh, bloody hell, you only live once, YOLO. But not for very long if you keep eating processed ham. So I'll either make like slice up the chicken and make chicken sandwiches, but listen here, right? Unplug the luggers because I got a recipe for you guys from Chef Taters. So I make two whole sandwiches because that's what's up. Okay, sourdough bread with, now I use low fat sour cream and salsa. Okay, I did use mayo, but if you saw my post the other day, it's a great little switch. Lower calorie with the sour cream. Yeah,
that's genius.
You commented, didn't you?
That's genius.
Yeah, tastes fucking great. It's just, I just want some moisture. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I just don't want to eat fucking dry ass chicken and fucking sourdough bread with no moisture. Okay, so sourdough, sour cream, low fat, of course, bodybuilding lifestyle, salsa, then low fat Tex-Mex cheese.
Mm.
We don't have zero fat cheese here in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Annoying, but is what it is. So it's like 90 calories per 30 grams, I think. I use 40 grams. I'm a rule breaker. So... and then I'll have some veggies in there too, tomatoes, onion, and then the meat, chicken or ham. And then I'll just stick that open, and the bread is untoasted, but I'll stick that in the air fryer and I'll put it in there for about 4 minutes, and the cheese melts, the chicken heats up, the toasts, the bread toasts.
Bob's your uncle.
And Bob's your uncle, how's your father?
Yeah.
And it tastes fucking awesome. And like,
I think you need to make a reel showing off this recipe, because think more people need to know about this.
Well, you know, I did actually take some video footage, some B-roll footage of me making the sandwich.
B-roll? You all had like a 1.8 aperture lens on you making an air fryer sandwich.
So it's smooth, but then it's like
some smooth lo-fi hip-hop going on.
But then it's like, does anyone actually want to eat this stuff? Like, I eat this same shit every fucking day, and Lucy rolls her eyes because she's like, this is like, I don't want to eat. In fact, like, she says that, but she, whenever I make a sandwich, if I don't make her one, she gets pissed off.
Yeah, and then does she like it? Has she tried it?
Yeah. She's like, are you making sandwiches? Yeah, I'll have one. Go on then. I'll have one. And then, like, if I don't make her one, she'll get upset. But then she'll be like, yeah, I don't like sandwiches that much. It's like, bullshit. Whenever I make you a fucking sandwich, you love that. You know?
It just goes to show you that women don't know what they want.
Yeah.
You always make extra food. Yeah, I don't know if you guys saw that meme. There's, like, this restaurant that, like, literally had something called, like, when your girlfriend says, I don't want anything. And it's like an extra like side of fries and like whatever. And
it's like what she really means. That break that down into.
Yeah.
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 I want so 12 fries, 2 tablespoons of ranch.
Oh, so, yeah. Good. Do you put what's like Marmite?
Marmite, yeah, yeah, Marmite. Yeah.
You
Marmite's
do
banging. You not in the sandwich. Oh. Not in the sandwich.
On no, your eggs.
Not in the sandwich. I don't put Marmite on my eggs. No, Marmite is fantastic on buttered toast.
And so Marmite toast, is that like a jelly or what is that?
It's a yeast extract or something, which doesn't sound too appealing. But yeah, I don't know.
Probiotics.
Yeah, it's some weird British thing. I don't even know.
Is it the same as Vegemite?
I can imagine it's pretty similar, but I think it's pretty similar, yeah. I think Vegemite's like the Australian
version
Australia. Of that, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But what I do sometimes for extra moisture, Branston pickle. And it's just like a pickled vegetables. This is British people are so weird.
That is the most British shit I have ever heard. I know. A little bit of Branston pickle.
It kind of sounds like relish.
It is kind of a relish, actually. I think it is kind of a relish. British people are weird, is what I've come to realize after moving out of the UK. All these weird foods and shit. I see like the British food section in the grocery store, and I'm like, man, we are a bunch of fucking weirdos.
We don't even have a British food section in the US usually. Nah, I haven't seen much.
Yeah, get rid of that shit, mate, because we're free over there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Although I have seen like meme pictures of in foreign grocery stores where they have the American section, and it's pretty fucking hilarious.
Yeah,
I've not seen that.
It's like Cheese Whiz and fucking like marshmallow fluff. Like, you don't even eat that shit.
Don't lie, mate.
What everyone else thinks the US eats. We just eat all the other cultures' foods. We just eat burgers and hot dogs. That's all we
Twinkies.
Eat. Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's the biggest like stereotype too. We just eat McDonald's every single day.
I mean, a lot of people do. A lot of people.
That's
do.
True.
A lot of
over
people
90 do. Was 99 billion served or some shit that they put like they put up.
That's
so.
Insane.
Where was I?
You talked about the Branston pickle.
Yeah. Sometimes I put Branston pickle in my sandwiches. So weird. But anyway, yeah. So I will make my lunches on my own. I do generally intermittent fasting. The first thing I've eaten today, woke up first thing this morning, I had a coffee and I had milk in it. And if you tell me that I've broken my fast, I tell you to piss off because I don't care. Because I like milk in my coffee. And then I have, that's all I've got to say about that. Then I'll have a smoothie some point between working out and lunch. So right now I'm having my smoothie. Then I'll have my sandwiches, or I might make some protein pancakes to have, or I don't know. I make some homemade pizzas sometimes here. And then for dinner, it'll be something that we make together as a family. And that's where it's just a little bit more like, it's harder to track the macros. Like if Lucy makes something, but I just have to make sure that I'm saving, I don't know, 800 to 1,000 calories for that. Because if Lucy makes something, like, it generally tastes way better than something that I make. Don't tell her I said that. Like, hopefully she doesn't listen to this. But if she makes, like, her Asian noodle thing, it's, like, the best thing I've ever tasted in the world. And I will eat more than I should. So I'm generally trying to save, like, 1,000 calories for dinner.
How do you track that? Like, do you just estimate?
Yeah, pretty much.
You just have like an idea in your head of like, this is probably 650 calories and like 30 grams of protein or whatever.
I will add in the ingredients I think that she's put in there. Like, so I don't track vegetables anyway,
mm-hmm.
unless they are high starch vegetables. So if it's just like bok choy, I'm not going to record bok choy in my sure. fitness pal.
So you just pretty much record like the sauce, maybe some oil, the noodles, the protein.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'll just estimate. I'll just estimate. And, you know, 70% is better than 0%
yeah.
of a guess.
I agree.
You know,
100%. I think that is such a good takeaway for people listening to this, because a lot of people struggle with this, and I think that's a banger of a remark, a statement to make about people who are struggling with eating food when they're preparing food with their families, or they're eating stuff they don't know, they're not sure. Like, I had a client who was like, my mom made meatloaf the other night and I had no idea how to track it. I'm like, whoa, what percentage of ground beef did she use? Right? Like, did she put eggs in it? Did she put breadcrumbs in it? You know, because those are going to be really the only ingredients in meatloaf. If you generally understand roughly what kind of ingredients people are using, it's like, okay, meatloaf, boom, you've got the meat, probably an egg or two, and some breadcrumbs. And then the rest is like seasonings and shit. So as long as you know that, now you know, okay, she used 80-20. And it was probably like 6 ounces. Okay. That was probably like a 300, 400 calorie slice of meatloaf. You know what I mean? So it's really not that hard. And this is why tracking everything for the first little bit is like, it's helpful, but it's totally not necessary if you have just used common sense and have a general understanding of like what ingredients are in recipes, which is hard for people. It's hard for people yeah. to do that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I also do want to add that if you're like, if it's especially something homemade, always break it down as best as you can. Cause you know, I'll have clients who are like, oh, you know, like I made like homemade, like Alfredo pasta or like meatloaf or whatever. And they'll just log it down. Like, oh, Mind of Fitness Pal, they'll just type in meatloaf. And then they'll just plug in like the first option they see. And the biggest mistake, or not really mistake, the biggest reason why you don't want to do this is because you don't know whose meatloaf recipe or whose Alfredo recipe that is, and how that actually compares to yours. Like, someone else might have added a ton of shit, extra shit into it, or maybe theirs is basic as fuck and you add a shit ton of stuff into it and you don't know, and the calorie discrepancy could be like very big.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I do see that a lot with people just plugging in a random recipe. And I think so there's certain foods I think you can do that, right? Like, let's say you're eating carne asada tacos from like your local Mexican spot and you're having two tacos. It's like, you can type in carne asada tacos into MyFitnessPal. You're going to get like the first 5 to 6 entries, and you're probably going to see roughly around 200 to 300 calories per taco. And so what I have my clients do is like, they can either record how much they think how much meat, tortilla, salsa, all that shit was in each taco, or they can pick like the higher average of those first like five or six entries. So I think there is a way to do it that there's no way to be 100% accurate with this. So I think what Andy said about like being 70% accurate is key. So I like that. That's a good point.
Yeah. And if I go out to a restaurant or something and I'm eating, if I'm eating there and I try and log it on my FitnessPal, I'll do the same thing where I'll just search the database to see what comes up. Maybe that restaurant will be in there. Maybe it won't. But I'll find that dish that I've had. And then using my knowledge, which does take time to build up, I'll choose the most realistic one that I think matches what I've actually eaten. And then oftentimes I'll times it by 1.2.
Yeah.
So if it says how many servings of this have you had, I'll be like 1.2 servings. Especially if I'm in a cut or something. So I'm just overestimating it a little bit, because chances are if you're eating in a restaurant, then they've put a little bit more butter in there or a bit more oil in there, you know, and it's hard to account for that kind of thing. So I generally will try and slightly overestimate that a little bit.
Let's say you have like 800 calories left for the night and you go and have a Thai noodle dish that, and then you figure out the calories after you eat it and you go over your calories that day. Like you do your times 1.2 and that dish ended up being like 1200 calories. So you went over 400 calories for the day, right?
Right.
Are you then going to make up for that the next day? And this is a totally different topic, but I'm just curious what you guys do. Are you going to make up for that the next day by trying to reduce by 400? Or are you trying to, or are you just saying, hey, that was an inconsistent day and I'm just going to chalk it up as that was an L day?
I'll tell you exactly what I do with my clients. I lock them in the chokey. Okay. I take them into the chokey. You guys seen Matilda?
Dude, not since I was like super young.
No.
Oh, then the joke's wasted.
Yeah, you're like choking. I'm like, you what, mate?
You gotta do what? Okay, the chokey is where Mr. Trunchbull, the mean headmaster, it's like this little room that's like, it's just this horrible room where she locks the naughty kids, basically. And so if my clients overeat their calories on a day, I will lock them in the chokey. Okay, you don't overeat calories.
What if you do it?
Yeah. I lock myself in the chokey, throw away the key, mate, choke, swallow it. I swallow it, track the calories, mate. Okay, seriously though, I don't throw away the key. Okay, I don't lock my clients in their chokey. And yes, if my clients go over on their calories, I just advise them to start fresh the next day. There's no need to punish yourself, because you just look back and you say, okay, what happened yesterday, or what happened over the course of the last week? What can I learn from what I've done there? You don't need to punish yourself. Even if you've messed up, you don't need to punish yourself, but you treat that as a learning experience, and it's always ongoing. Like, you're going to mess up more times. And, okay, you going over like 500 calories might set you back like 1 or 2 days or whatever in your goal. But in the grand scheme of things, like trying to punish yourself the next day, it's like, it's not a good rabbit hole to go down. But if you could look back and say, okay, what did I do that day that could have been improved, or was what I did that day worth delaying a day's worth of progress?
Sure.
And if you've gone out for dinner with your family or friends and you've eaten at like maintenance or even in a surplus for the day, but you had a fucking wicked time, that's totally worth it. And it's like, who cares if you set yourself back a day? That's fine. You know, that's fine. Or if you were just eating like an idiot and you've just been like eating, and I'm guilty of this, by the way, if you're just eating like chocolate and shit and you're not eating actual proper food that's going to keep you feeling full, and then by the time dinner rolls around, you're just shoveling your face you know, while you're trying to cook dinner, and then you're cooking dinner, having two portions, you go way over because you haven't been following your plan, your program, you haven't been prepared, then you can look back on that and say, maybe I shouldn't had an O'Henry for breakfast. I should have had, you know, one of Andy Tate's ham sandwiches in the air fryer. You know what I mean? With some Branston pickle. So, you know, you can look back and you can treat that as a learning process, so that next time, it's just it's eye opening, isn't it, when you do that? Because you've got the data to say, I've tracked that. Now you've got the data to say, what can I do to improve going forward without punishing yourself?
Yeah, man. I like that. Sure. That's awesome. So as far as like, so to kind of recap what you do for the most part is, you prep very similarly to me and Austin. Like, you'll do bulk protein prep, always have rice on hand, always have stuff going and cooking. And then basically Lucy prepares dinner, and then you kind of, I'm sure you prepare dinner too sometimes, but yeah, like,
yeah,
you just kind of like make a big pot of food for your fam at the end of the night.
Yeah. And actually, one thing that Lucy and I have been talking about recently is doing a bit more of a meal prep and setting some time aside to meal prep, which is something that we should be doing, really. And the reason that I'm like thinking about it right now is because when you're so busy, like I have an in-person job. It's not full-time, but it takes up a lot of time because I have to commute there and back. But I have an in-person job. I have to get my own training and steps in. I have my child to take care of. My partner works weekends generally, so we try and schedule some time together outside of all of that within the working week. And so trying to find more time that I have to take away from work to meal prep is something that I'm finding is difficult for me to figure out at the moment, but it's definitely something we're trying to do. And overall, it's going to be helpful, but it's just like another one of those things where it's like, at first it's going to be time consuming, but then in the long run, it's going to be beneficial for the family. So it just goes to show, like, even coaches, it's like there's still stuff to work on, you know. Mm-hmm. There's still always stuff to work on. No one's got it down, you know what I mean?
So, yeah. Cool.
Yeah. You mentioned that you prepare most of your meals, right? Quite for yourself. So I don't know if you have like a lot of experience with this, but definitely a lot of parents who, like, on the regular, they'll like cook for their entire family. Like, what would you recommend for them who also want to kind of keep track of their calories, but also, you know, struggle with that because they don't really have much time or energy for like individual portions?
Well, I would say that, you know, you can make good use of the MyFitnessPal recipe function. And if you don't know what that is, then it's basically where you track every single ingredient that you put into the recipe in its entirety. So you don't need to be like, okay, this plate of food that I'm about to eat has this amount of ingredients. You weigh and measure everything that goes into the whole thing. And then it asks you how many servings that is. So you can say, okay, how much am I putting into this? Okay, this recipe needs however much rice or pasta or whatever, right? And then how many servings is that going to be? And again, it doesn't need to be exact. It just needs to be a somewhat accurate approximation. And then it will ask you how many servings that is, and then you just click one serving on MyFitnessPal and it'll enter that to your database. But the thing is, right, when it comes to you having a goal, whether that's weight loss or weight gain or maintain weight, really the number one thing to do is to track your body weight and then to see what's going on. Like, you don't need to track calories and macros in order to make progress. It can help you. It's more data to help you make decisions, to make changes. But you don't have to. Like, if you track your body weight daily and you do what we say, take daily weight measurements and then track the averages, if you're seeing the trend going in the right direction, you're probably pretty much good. Like, okay, maybe you can focus on increasing protein. That can help. But overall, if you're getting protein at like most meals, you should be fine. And if you're seeing progress in the right direction, then you're good. You know, nothing needs to really change. So if you're not tracking body weight, that's the one thing that I would suggest to do. If you do have a goal, let's say you want to lose weight, track your body weight. If it doesn't change for 2 weeks, then you're going to have to cut something down. Doesn't mean you need to track it, but you need to be more conscious of, I don't know, portions, snacking. And if you want to track your calories, you can do that. Otherwise, you're just going to have to make a conscious effort of cutting away at something. You're going to have to trim away calories somehow. And then once you see the progression there, and we're not talking about vast changes on the scale, we're not talking about 10 pounds in a month. We're talking about, you know, on average, half a pound to a pound, maybe a week on average.
Yeah, I like that. The don't miss the forest for the trees kind of thing. It's like, you're making great progress, but then you're like, but I'm not hitting my 120 grams of protein. I'm only getting like 115. It's like, calm the fuck down.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And so like to make things easier, of course, like tracking macros and calories is really, like, if you've never done it before, you can learn so much from doing it. And so it's always a recommendation of mine to at least some point do that, because you will learn so much. But it's not always a good time for everyone. If you've got like a thriving family and you want to start tracking macros, maybe it's a good time. If you've got a supportive family and you can do it, great. But otherwise, you're going to have to remind yourself on the regular that you don't need to be 100% accurate. And the reason you don't need to be 100% accurate is because your weight will tell you whether you're making progress or not if you have a goal of trying to lose weight, right? So that's why you don't need to be 100% accurate. That's what I would say.
All right. So what about you, Jeff, from a world-renowned chef? What is your diet and meal prep process look like?
You know, it's funny because you guys are hyping me up, but chefs are by and far the laziest fucking cooks for themselves when they're not on the clock. So it's funny because it's like people think that, oh, you're a chef, I want you to cook for me, or when are you going to make dinner for us? Mm-hmm. You're a chef. It's like, motherfucker, I cook all day. I want to just slap some shit together when I get home, right? So I kind of still have those habits when it comes to my own food preparation. Like, what can I stick with? Now, I think for me, where I may differ from you guys is I have an extensive spice cabinet. Like, my spice cabinet and collection is crazy. Like, I have every single spice and herb, and it's like in these labeled containers, and everything is like everything. I have everything. And the reason for that is because, like, I like to season the shit out of my food. Like, I like a lot of flavor. So I'm probably making the exact same meals as you guys. Only difference is, like, I'm seasoning it probably with a lot more stuff. So, and that just comes with time and understanding what seasonings go with what. But I use my Instant Pot almost every single week. That is like that's my shit. I will throw a bag of frozen chicken thighs into the Instant Pot with some garlic powder and some soy sauce and some salt and pepper, and literally I will just throw that in there, and then I'll have shredded chicken thighs or chicken breast for the week, and I will make tacos with that, I will make salads with that, I will make quesadillas, stir fries, whatever like I want to make for the week. I will use that protein as like the staple, and then I'll even pre-cook off like some ground beef, ground turkey, and then I always have egg whites and eggs on hand for breakfast. And lately I've been using a lot of frozen potatoes. So rather than chopping up fresh potatoes, which is a pain in the ass, and then you got to wash them, you got to peel them, you got to do all that, I have been actually just using like either frozen hash browns, or I buy like the frozen potatoes O'Brien. If you guys ever had that, it's like, it's pretty much just potatoes, onions, and bell peppers, and you buy the frozen bag of potatoes, chuck that in the air fryer, fry up a couple eggs and some, I like center cut bacon because it's higher in protein, lower in fat, couple pieces of whole wheat toast because fiber, and that's my breakfast, right? So like simple, easy. I like simple shit. And that breakfast takes me about 5 minutes to cook, you know? And what's cool about that breakfast is like I can make that breakfast and I'll put the eggs on super low heat. I'll put the potatoes in the air fryer and the bacon. I actually pre-cook the bacon at the beginning of the week in the air fryer. So I'll like par cook the bacon and put it in a Tupperware. So I have the bacon ready to go. Once the potatoes are almost done, I'll throw the bacon that's par cooked into the air fryer. So super simple. I don't have to think about shit. I put my toast in the toaster and I can let all that cook while I'm doing other stuff and know that it's not going to burn because everything's on like pretty low heat and I know how long everything usually takes. So that meal maybe takes 10 minutes, but what's cool is once I get everything set up, it's like a 2 minute setup and then it's a 10 minute cook time. So that breakfast is done without me thinking about it. I don't have to watch it. I just let that cook and then I go and do other shit. And then by the time my timer goes off for the air fryer, everything's ready to go. So that is like a really convenient way to cook breakfast.
What's the protein on that?
The protein? It's, yeah. So it's two eggs. The toast has protein in it. The toast, I think, has 4 grams of protein each and 2 grams of fiber each. And then the bacon has like, I think it's 6 grams of protein for two slices. So it's like 30 grams of protein for that meal.
Okay, not bad.
Not bad. It's a little bit – if you wanted to reduce the calories, you could cut out the toast because, I mean, you're already getting potatoes in there. So,
I don't want to cut out the toast.
All right. Well, then have the toast. If you wanted to bump up the protein, you could add in like half a cup of liquid egg whites into the eggs.
How would you do that if you were doing – because you do fried eggs?
Yeah. So I don't scramble. I just crack the eggs in the pan. And then with the egg whites, you could just add in half a cup of liquid egg whites. Let all that cook on like medium-low heat. And so thing about egg whites is the reason why a lot of people don't like them is because they cook them on too high of heat. And what happens when egg whites get color on them – and they start to create this sulfury kind of bitter taste. So if you actually cook it on like medium low heat, it's gonna taste a lot better. And you just season that with salt and pepper, a little hot sauce, whatever. Mm. Yeah, yeah. So
getting hungry.
That's breakfast, and then I will usually have some fruit to hold me over till lunch. And fruit is always frozen. I buy a bag of mixed frozen fruit from Walmart. That's like $8 for a huge bag of fruit. And it's like mangoes, pineapples, peaches. It's really fucking good. And then I throw some blueberries in there too. So it's like it's 280 grams of frozen fruit and 140 grams of blueberries. And
you fold that out?
I put it in the microwave on defrost. I'll set it for half a pound on defrost, and it does get a little warm. So if you're like totally turned off by warm fruit, then put it back in the fridge for 10 minutes. But I actually like that. I think it tastes good, and I have that, and it holds me over till lunch really easily. And then lunch is usually tacos or a salad. If I'm in a cut, if I'm in a fat loss phase, it's going to be probably a salad with some low-fat dressing, maybe just like maybe like half a tablespoon of olive oil and some balsamic, and then I'll have like some greens, some arugula, and some protein on there. Keep it really simple. And then tacos, same thing. I'll use that prepped out chicken thighs or chicken breast, some cilantro, onion, salsa, and then I'll usually have some rice on the side with that. Make sure I'm getting lots of carbs. And then a snack is usually like a protein bar, or I'll do like pretzels with hummus. I've been fucking with the pretzels with hummus lately. Really, really digging that. So that's my afternoon snack. That is definitely a food. Pretzels and hummus, that is definitely a food that I will overeat though. Like I will be like, I want a little bit more, and then I won't track that, right? So I got to be mindful of that, especially when I'm coming into a deficit next week. So just got to
Are you?
Yeah. Yep.
Tell us about that.
Just a 10-week – so I'm doing the 10-week summer shred coming up here soon with Paul Carter and his squad. So that's going to be – I don't really know the details. I think Alan Aragon's going to be doing our nutrition though, which is awesome. So it's like a Facebook group.
Okay, that's cool. Yeah.
Yeah, it should be really fun. And 10 weeks is like – that's not bad. And I actually looked at my measurements since I started this little lean bulk I've been doing, and the surplus, and it's things are trending in the right direction as far as measurements go. I'm only up maybe 1 centimeter around the waist, but everything else is going up as well. So arms are going up, chest is going up, hips are going up, thighs are going up. So all of that's going up. So that's nice. Why are you looking at me like that?
Still going up, mate.
Yeah. Increasing that girth.
I'm getting girthy as fuck. Yeah. So yeah, things are going good. And then dinner time, so dinner time is where I will usually have, like, I really enjoy a big ass rice bowl. So I will, especially right now while I'm in a surplus, I think I have been hammering in the carbs a lot more. So definitely I like the big rice bowls with like vegetables, and I'll usually do some ground turkey, ground beef, or some steak in there. Or lately I've been doing this too. If I'm feeling really lazy and I didn't prep, and I know I need to prep like the next day or something, I have these lean chicken breast chicken nuggets that are fire. I actually just got them. They're super good. The macros are 15 grams of protein and 5 grams of fat. And like,
wow,
I think 3 or 4 carb. So super good macros. And then I'll throw in some of those Alexia sweet potato waffle fries, which are amazing. By the way, if you guys haven't had those, Andy's pissed because they don't have food like that in Canada.
Yeah, I am. Actually, but that's exactly why.
and I'll have some like low fat ranch dressing with that, or some low sugar ketchup, and that's really good. And then sometimes if I have the calories, I'll have like half a pint or a pint of Fairlife ice cream, which is like 500 calories a pint. I like the chocolate chip cookie dough. And that's my day. And that's like, I could eat that shit. I could eat that way for years and not get sick of that. So, and it doesn't require a lot of prep. Like I said, a lot of this food is prepped on Sundays and a lot of it's frozen. And all I got to do is chuck it in the air fryer. So really the only thing I have to prep for the week is like chop up vegetables, make sure I have vegetables ready to throw in the air fryer. Sometimes I'll buy the pre-cut vegetables from the store and throw those in the air fryer. Sometimes I'll buy frozen vegetables if I'm like, I just need to get like a bag of broccoli in for the day. Sometimes I will air fry a bag of broccoli and just eat a whole bag of broccoli. So I know how important vegetables are, and I know how good I feel when I eat them. So I do prioritize like at least a fistful of vegetables at each meal. And if I neglect my vegetables, I feel like shit. So I try and get them in every single day.
Yeah, I need to eat more veggies.
Nice. Yeah. It's easy to miss. That's why I think the big-ass salad helps a lot. If you have a big-ass salad at lunch, or instead of the big-ass salad, like somewhere in between lunch and dinner have like a whole bag of broccoli or like some sort of frozen vegetables. Like just air fry it up, get it down, salt and pepper, a little bit of olive oil spray or something, and just get it in. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I honestly think a lot of people don't like vegetables because they don't know how to prepare them and make them taste good.
Yeah. I agree with that.
People think you just gotta have fucking steamed broccoli or some shit and just like taste like fucking paper.
Right. I remember growing up, my mom used to prepare vegetables and it was always like frozen mixed medley vegetables like cauliflower, broccoli, carrots, and whatever else. But it was like she would just microwave the whole bag and like way over microwave it. No seasoning, no salt, no butter, like nothing on the vegetables. So it was like this pile of mush that she would pile on my plate and my dad would yell at me to eat my vegetables. And it's like, dude, no wonder I fucking hated vegetables. And then I started working in restaurants when I was like 16 and chefs would like show me how to like char vegetables with like olive oil and butter and like salt and pepper. And like, he'd be like, here, taste that. And I'd be like, oh my God, that's what broccoli tastes like. Like, I had no idea. I was like, that is so good. I had this like broccoli with polenta. Have you guys ever had polenta, by the way?
I think no.
So it's basically corn, like they grind up corn into like a flour and then they mix it with usually some chicken stock and like some butter and they make like this corn porridge thing, and it's super good if you never had it. And we charred up broccoli florets and like put that over the broccoli with like some chili oil. It was like amazing, and that was the first time I was like, dude, broccoli is so good. How have I been sleeping on broccoli for this long?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also to kind of go off on that, like, don't take this the wrong way and be like, oh, vegetables taste so good because I added like a fucking pound of butter in there. Like, obviously, like, use your oils in moderation. Like, a little bit of oil goes a long way, as mm-hmm. I'm sure you know. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it helps with flavor, and actually fat, there's a lot of fat soluble vitamins in vegetables. So I think adding fat to your vegetables is beneficial for flavor, and it also mm-hmm. helps you get them in. So yeah. I would rather have somebody add a little bit of fat into their vegetables so that they actually enjoy them than not eat them at all. Obviously, track your calories, make sure you're still reaching your goals, but a little bit of olive oil is not going to fucking kill you.
Yeah, like half tablespoon, a tablespoon goes a long way.
Oh, yeah. A tablespoon is a lot. It's a lot if you actually track it. Like, that's why I like using spray olive oil, because it's just like you get the flavor of the olive oil, probably helps with the nutrient absorption, and it's... And you're not like adding, you're probably adding 5 calories, you know?
You find it ruins your pans, the spray olive oil?
So it depends what pan I'm using, but I think what ruins pans more is using the wrong kinds of utensils for the pans. Like if people are using a nonstick and they're using like a metal spatula or like a wooden, even like a wooden spatula that has rough surfaces and you're scraping your pan, that's stupid. Mm-hmm. Like, don't do that. If you have a nice pan, like a Teflon, like a nice or even a stainless steel pan, and those can take a little bit more abuse, but they're also not nonstick, so you have to use more fat with those. I tend to use more nonsticks, and then I have a few nicer pans that I will, if I'm prepping up some proteins, I will like get those ripping on high heat. Nonstick pans, you should never put those on high heat. That actually ruins the coating. It's actually really bad for you to put those on high heat. It's toxic.
Yeah, I've heard, especially like if it's like Teflon, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Stainless steel pans, cast iron pans, those you can get pretty hot. and make sure you're using temperature safe oils as well, like olive oil. Mm-hmm. Once it gets past a certain smoke point, it's, if you see the pan smoking with the oil you're using, you probably want to use a more stable cooking oil like avocado oil or even canola oil. Oh my God, he's recommending canola oil. Yeah.
Oh my God, all the inflammation.
Oh my God, people need to shut the fuck up with that stuff. Yeah. All right. Well.
All right.
I think
there we have it.
I think that brings us to a natural stopping point. Man, this was a good episode. I think a lot of people are going to get some good tips out of this one. And cooking kind of like demystify it for people who think that all of us fitness coaches are just like prepping for hours every single week. It's like, it's not that hard to do if you just prep a little bit in advance, you know, maybe take an hour out of your week and set yourself up for success. So thank you guys for listening. And we'll see you guys next week.
Catch you all later.
Bye.